It's amazing
to
see.
Did you press the red button?
I did press the red button.
It's amazing to see all of you devoting your summer vacation before it gets started in earnest to devoting the entire day to learning Torah. It's pretty awesome. And Rabbi Sprung is amazing. I know he just walked out, but he's amazing. And the fact that he was able to organize this and that you get to spend so much time with him, learning with him, is awesome. And it is a pleasure to participate. So I am under the impression that you're going to be learning Maseches Baba Kama at least for part of the day. And hopefully you've had a little bit of a chance to get introduced to Maseches Baba Kama. So Maseches Baba Kama deals with one major theme. So what is that? What is that major theme? If you would,
Nezikin.
Yes, right. It deals with, which means
damages.
Damages, right? So it deals with all sorts of different kinds of damages. Damages can come in different forms, right? What's one type of way you can damage someone or cause damage to someone?
Your animals.
Right. So you could your animals. Right, you could cause damage personally, your animals could cause damage. What kind of damage would that be causing? It would be causing...
Physical.
Right, so physical damage. Well, if you cause physical damage to another person, right, you could hurt them. Right, that would be called chavala. That's sort of towards the end of the Masechta. You deal with the question of, like, if you hurt someone, causing physical damage. You cause physical damage to property or belongings. So what kind of that... But that damage would not... It would be physical in the sense that you've, like, destroyed it. But it would be, in terms of the ramifications, it would be like monetary damage, right? That you've caused damage to someone's property. There's also something kind of in between, which kind of talks about in the middle of the Masechta, right? So the beginning of the Masechta talks about, like, if you damage someone's property such that you owe them money. The end of the Masechta talks about if you damage someone physically, like you hurt them, right? And they, you know, you maim them or, you know, sort of physically impair them. And in the middle, there's another kind of damage called theft, which is kind of like in between. Like, on the one hand, it's monetary, but at the same time, it's like a little bit more personal than just causing some monetary damage because you happen to break something that belongs to someone. When you steal something, it's like invasive, right? There's an element of like a personal affront that you go ahead and the victim feels a certain degree of vulnerability when that takes place. So that's kind of like in the middle. So it's interesting that when you talk about the world of damages and nezikin, you have these different types. So the way we just kind of phrased it, on the one hand, you start off with like the most, I guess, insignificant sort of damage, which is if your animals or you damage somebody's property such that you owe them money, right? That is something where, at first glance, if I break your phone, so what should I do? Right, I should pay you back for it. I should compensate you for that loss. And at first glance, that interaction really just kind of seems like it's not like I did something personally against you. It's not like I've victimized you or done something inherently abhorrent, right? It's not nice to damage. If it was done on purpose, I should probably work on my midos. But it's not the same degree if I would like go and punch someone in the face, right? That's like a much more significant action. So at first glance, when you talk about Nezikin and the part of Baba Kama that you're going to be learning, which is the beginning of Baba Kama, you're talking about monetary damages, which sounds like it's about dollars and cents. We can very easily decide, I break your phone, so I should pay you X amount of dollars. I crash into your car, so I'm going to have to pay you X amount of dollars. Or you come and your animal gets loose and it goes into my garden and ruins all of my fruits and vegetables, so you're going to have to pay me for the loss that was caused, right? Sounds like it's pretty straightforward and simple. The Latin phrase that you would use for this would be, quid pro quo. Anyone ever hear the phrase of quid pro quo?
Mm-hmm.
What is quid pro quo?
This for that.
This for that, right? I damage you in this way, so I have to make you whole again. I have to compensate you, exactly parallel to that which I did. And that's what would seem at first glance what damaging is all about, what Nezikin is all about. The only thing is that I don't know how much you've seen of the different sources that we sent out, but there's an interesting Gemara on Daf Lam in Baba Kama where the Gemara has a very funny comment by Chazal. What does the Gemara tell us? The Gemara says, in the name of Rava, in the name of who? Rav Yehuda. In the name of Rav Yehuda. The Gemara says, "Haiman zibayi lemehave chasida." What does it mean to be to lemehave chasida? What does the word chasida mean?
Chasid.
Yeah, what, right. It means to be a chasid, right? To be very pious and righteous. So the Gemara says, how does one try to come to this high level of piety? So what would you say? How did you become very pious?
Follow the Torah.
Okay, you say follow the Torah in general. Okay, good. If you had to pick like certain aspects of the Torah, what aspects might you single out as being examples of like really high piety? Okay, good. So v'ahavta l'rayecha kamocha, right? Being kind to others, that would be a good example.
Chesed,
right? You would pick out like some ideas. You wouldn't say like, I don't know, keeping kosher. You say like that's what you have to do. That's not piety, right? Is that like a high degree of piety? That's like basics. You know what you have to do. Piety you normally associate with like going above and beyond, right? So when the Gemara asks, how does one become pious? That's what the Gemara asks. So the Gemara gives three solutions, three suggestions to how one becomes very pious, and the first one is actually somewhat surprising. The Gemara says, "Likayim mili dinazikin." The best way to become pious is you should follow the rules of nazikin. Like, don't let your property damage other people. Don't damage other people. If you damage someone, you should pay them back. And now you're like, you know, a tremendously pious chassid. It's kind of funny, right? That seems like basic, just, you know, quid pro quo human nature. If I damage, so I pay back. That doesn't make me pious. It's not when if someone crashes into you and then, like, you know, you have to, they have to pay you back for your car damages. Do you look at it and go, wow, that person's so pious? Like, no, that's what you have to do. You have to pay back for the damages. So that's a very funny line that the Gemara thinks that somehow by engaging and following the rules of Nazikin, you become this super pious individual. The other two examples actually are probably a little bit more intuitive, right? The Gemara says the other example, the other possibility is l'kayim mili de'avos. What does mili de'avos refer to? Any ideas?
Perkei Avos.
Yeah, so what would Perkei Avos, right? Perkei Avos, right? V'ahavta l'rayecha kamocha, du chesed, right? That's pretty much the theme of Perkei Avos, so that makes a lot of sense. You want to be very pious, so of course you have to keep the whole Torah. But if you want to really focus on becoming extra pious, so like, you know, follow Perkei Avos really well, because that's kind of going above and beyond. The other answer the Gemara gives is also very interesting. It says, mili de brachos, right? Be very careful and cognizant of how we make brachos, because what is a brach all about?
Gratitude,
a connection to Hashem, right? Recognizing that there's a higher being. So that's really kind of going above and beyond just like the mere interactions and daily routines that we go about, but like a bracha kind of elevates things to a higher level. So we can understand how brachos and Perkei Avos and chesed, v'ahavta l'rayecha kamocha, these types of things, we understand that that makes us very pious. But mili dinazikin, that you should pay back money when you damage someone's property, like, that's just basics, right? That's basic human nature. You don't need a Torah to tell you that, right? If you walk down the street and stop anyone on the street, Jew, non-Jew, Muslim, Christian, this, that, whatever it is, you ask them, what do you think? If I go ahead and, like, I break your computer, should I pay you back? Like, what are they going to tell you? Right? Yeah, of course you can pay me back. You don't need a Torah to tell you that. What is it that mili dinazikin creates some sort of high level of piety? Okay, that's the question we want to deal with. And I think this is kind of underlying the entire nature of what Bava Kamma and Nazikin is all about. Because yes, on the one hand, we identify that there are different types of damages. And there are damages that are monetary. And there are damages, you know, you talk about stealing, you can talk about theft, you can talk about injury. And as you kind of go up that hierarchy, you might, you know, see more and more how the actions that you're involved in are more significantly problematic, right? Injuring someone is much worse than damaging their property, right? That's like, if you punch someone, that's like inherently bad, right? Even if you don't injure them, punching someone is inherently bad, right? Whereas if you do something that, you know, is damaging, it's not inherently bad, it just had a negative consequence that you have to now compensate the person for. But it sounds like, apparently, that the entire concept of the Zikin is something that might be a little bit above and beyond just this, you know, making a monetary transaction, you know, trying to like make someone, you know, compensate someone for a loss, but rather it's something deeper about like a special Kedushas Yisrael, a special aspect that we have a Torah which teaches us these rules of Nezikin, and somehow that goes above and beyond just the regular, if I damage your phone, so I should pay you $10 or whatever the phone costs. Okay, so how does this manifest itself? This might manifest itself in a very fundamental question that many of the Rishonim try to deal with in the Gemara, and that is there a prohibition? Is there an Isser, Da'oraisa, right, for a biblical prohibition to go ahead and damage someone else's property? Is that Usser? What do you think? Right, what do we know about the damaging someone else's property? What do we know about it? What do you have to do? Right, the first Mishnah, right, the first Mishnah in Baba Kama says that there's a common denominator. There are all different types of ways you can damage and you can cause damage to other people's property, and there's a common denominator between all of them. What's the common denominator? That in all of these aspects, be it your animals, be it, you know, if you start a fire, be it if you dig a pit in the public domain, in all these aspects, what's the common denominator? That these are things that can potentially cause damage. You or me, whoever is the responsible party, has to make sure to protect others from damage based off of these items. And if in the event you are negligent and something that is related to your ownership or your responsibility causes damage, what do you have to do? Pay back. Does that mean that you get like a strike against you in Shemayim, like the, when it comes to Yom Kippur, on Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah, that you have to like do teshuva because you damaged? Right? It just means you have to pay back, which based on what we said initially would make a lot of sense. It's not prohibited to damage. It's not that it's usher damage. Is it usher to punch someone in the face? Yeah, it's probably usher. It's probably usher to punch someone in the face. But is it usher to cause a monetary loss? What would be a problem if you cause monetary loss and you don't pay. And you don't pay back? But once you pay it back, it seems like everything should be fine and dandy, right? Well, many of Rishonim are not so sure about that. I don't know how much you guys were able to see, but the Maharit, right? The Maharit is quoted by the Mishnah Melech in the Rambam. Did people get to see a little bit of the Rambam? Yeah. So the Maharit is quoted by the Mishnah Melech, and the Maharit says, you know what? When it comes to damaging property, when it comes to causing a monetary loss, that's not really usser, right? The Torah didn't prohibit you from causing monetary loss or causing damage. It just told you that if you do damage, then you have to pay back. But there's no problem. You don't have to do teshuva. You don't have to go ask for forgiveness for causing damage. You just have to go pay back the money. That's what Maharit says. And therefore, midaraisa, there's no isser whatsoever. But many of the Rishonim, maybe you came across the few, seem to disagree with that. They actually seem to say that I don't care if you pay back the money or you didn't pay back the money, right? Even if you paid back the money, there is still a deeper problem when you cause someone damage. And what is that? That you violated an isser. Now, what isser? Right, that's why everybody's so quiet, right? Because you're like, well, what did you violate? And you're like, well, wait a second, I'm not sure what isser I violated. Because does the Torah ever tell you that it is usser lahazik? Does the Chumash ever use that phrase? Right, the Torah says don't steal, the Torah says don't hit, the Torah says don't injure, right? But does the Torah say don't damage? No, it never says it. So the Maharit says, you know why it doesn't say it? Because it's not usser. It's just that you have to pay back. The Torah tells you to pay back. It does not usser. But some of the other Rishonim say, no, it is usser. You have to look more carefully. Right? So Rashi and Gittin says that there's Nisr Daraisa. Right? There is Nisr Daraisa. And the Birka Shmuel, right, from quotes from Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, that there's for sure an isser. And they're all trying to figure out what is the isser. Does anyone remember? Did anyone see a suggestion of what part of the Torah might tell us that there's an isser to do damage to cause a monetary loss? Anyone remember?
No, that was for
anyone remember? Right, there was a did you see the Rabbeinu Yonah? Anyone take a look at Rabbeinu Yonah? Okay. So Rabbeinu Yonah has an amazing insight. This Rabbeinu Yonah is on his comments in Perkei Avos. It's probably on the back of your sheet. And Rabbeinu Yonah says, the beginning of Perkei Avos tells us that, right, Moshe received the Torah and passed it down from generation to generation, right? Familiar with this Mishnah? Right, he passed down the Torah. So Rabbeinu Yonah says, you know how important it is to have this chain of Mesorah, this passing down of the Torah from generation to generation, this oral tradition that goes ahead and explains all of the written laws? So Rabbeinu Yonah says, you know why that's so important? Because if you didn't have that oral tradition, you wouldn't know that there's an Isser de Oraisa, there's a biblical prohibition to go ahead and cause damage. You know how you know it? Because when the Torah says don't steal, included in the Isser of not stealing means also don't cause damage. Don't damage other people's property and cause them a monetary loss. And if you do, even if you pay back, you've still violated an Isser. Because according to the Torah, damaging property is not just about dollars and cents. It's not just about paying back money. It's about something deeper. It's mili dechasida. It's about cultivating a certain type of personality, a certain type of kedushas Yisrael, where all of our actions are so significant and so meaningful that even if we pay back the money, the act itself still has some degree of abhorrence to it. There's still something, you know, really terrible about the act itself. So Rabbeinu Yonah says that's learned from the fact that you can't steal. If you can't steal, you also can't damage. Some of the other Mefarshim, like the Rashash in Ksubas, which I guess if you didn't see the Rabbeinu Yonah, probably didn't see the Rashash, but the Rashash says, you know how you know you can't do damage? Because the Torah does tell us something else also. It tells us that you have to return lost objects. Why do you have to return a lost object? Because obviously we care about other people's property to the point where if they lose something, we feel a responsibility to return it. So if we have to return their object to them because if they don't have it, they can't use it properly. So kal v'chomer, of course, we can't damage their property. Because we damage their property, we also inhibit their usage of that property. We also kind of take it away from them, you know, make it lost, so to speak. So the reason that it is prohibited, the way we know that there's an iser to oraisa to do damage, is because we know that we have to return the item. So kal v'chomer, you can't damage the item. Again, it's not just about paying back money. It's that if you damage, that act itself has some degree of severity. There's an element of disgust in the act itself. Now, not quite as much as if you would like injure someone, right? Injuring someone is a much worse act. And even stealing is probably a much worse act. But there's already signs, according to maybe some of the Rishonim, that the action of doing damage, even if you pay back the money, is still a terrible act. And that's because, as B'nai Yisrael, we have a special added level of Kedusha, where if we damage people's property, we don't just say, here's the money, forget about it. We feel that that action in and of itself is something that we need to kind of obliterate, that we need to avoid, that we need to cultivate a personality that creates a certain level of spiritual meaning in life that Nezikin is inherently evil.
Like in the first mission, I feel like a lot of these, like with the ox or the pit, like that's, you can't control that. Like you can try, but a lot of it is really unintentional. So like you should like apologize and pay back what you can, but like I feel like that's it's not just less severe than intentionally hurting someone. I feel like that's kind of a whole different category.
So what you're pointing out is 100% correct. It's important to keep in mind that on the hierarchy of things, right? Like we're mentioning that there are different categories here. On the hierarchy of things, you're 100% correct. In the world of Bava Kamma, beginning of Bava Kamma, the emphasis is certainly on the dollars and the cents, the monetary obligation. And you're correct that a lot of the issues are not necessarily a function of blame or of intent, where there's malicious type of motivation to try and hurt someone or damage their property. So you're correct in that it's important to recognize that when we talk about the balance here, the main emphasis is on paying back. That's true. But I think there are some hints to the fact that beyond just paying back, there are already signs that we want to have a little bit more of an elevated standard to what it means to protect our property, to watch our property, to have personal responsibility, to make sure that not only do we not injure others, for sure not, you know that we don't steal off from others, but we also have like this heightened level of responsibility for others, that even if we have an animal that gets loose, that we, you know, have a certain responsibility to try and take a little bit of an extra precaution to make sure that that doesn't happen. And that's not because of the fact that, you know, I have to pay back the money, because I can pay back the money without taking that extra precaution. That's because, as B'nai Torah, we try to kind of elevate our level of cognizance and action to a degree where we try to create a little bit of an extra, you know, above and beyond the letter of the law type of sentiment. But you're 100% correct that in this world, the emphasis is on the paying back. And what we're trying to kind of show here is that even though that's the emphasis, there's still an element, there's still a degree of that this is a reflection of something a little bit deeper, a little bit better, a little bit more meaningful, obviously, which is present in stealing, and obviously which is present in injuring others. That is where clearly the action in and of itself is a terrible problem. But even here, there's signs of it to a certain degree. But not everybody agrees, right? The Maharit would say exactly what you said. The Maharit would say, this is totally wrong. The Maharit would say, when it comes to all these cases, the only consideration is, how much money do you owe? It has nothing to do with your personality, nothing to do with your spiritual personality, nothing to do with going above and beyond the letter of the law, nothing to do with an extra Kedushas Yisrael that we try to take an extra added level of responsibility. None of that whatsoever. It's about paying back money, right? That's the Maharit. That would be the Maharit. Now, what's the difference between those two options, right? If you say that this is really just about paying back money, or if there's an element of like this action is inherently problematic. So, right, if there's actually an iser to oraisa, so to speak, of damaging, that there's something bad about the action. So what would be a practical difference between these two opinions? So here's the easy one that I alluded to earlier. Now maybe it'll be a little bit more crystallized. On Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, you went back, you go through, and you're thinking about all the things that you want to do better next year. So you remember that, you know, one time, I don't know, your dog, you know, went to the neighbor's backyard and ruined their garden. Or one time you borrowed your friend's whatever and you broke it, right? You paid your neighbor back. You paid your friend back. Now it's Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Do you have to call up your neighbor? Do you have to call up your friend and say, I know I paid you back, but you know, I feel really bad that I was a little bit irresponsible, or that I made this mistake and my dog ruined your garden, or I broke your whatever, you know, whatever item I borrowed, and I want to ask for forgiveness. So is someone obligated to ask for forgiveness? Right, so according to the Maharit, that there's no isser, there was no prohibition to damage, to cause monetary loss to someone. All you have to do is make sure you pay them back. So then in Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, do you have to go back and ask for forgiveness? Did you do something wrong? You didn't do anything wrong. You don't have to ask for forgiveness. But according to the positions in the other Rishonim, like in Rashi and the Rashash, and we'll see, you know, in the Rambam, which we're probably not going to have time to get through in detail, but the Rambam also seems to think that there is an element of an Isser, right? I don't know if you see the Rambam?
No.
Okay, so I won't get into it in detail. Maybe we'll say that for another time. But for these Rishonim, that there's an Isser, so you know what they would say in the Rambam passing this way? You would actually have to call up your friend and ask for forgiveness, even though you already paid back the money. Because you also, the action, there was an element of insult or injury even in that monetary loss that you have already compensated. Another interesting practical example that would distinguish between these two positions would be the question of someone testifying in Beis Din. Right? We know that in order to testify in Beis Din, someone has to have a certain character, you know, have a certain degree of their character traits have to be up to a certain threshold. They have to be an upstanding citizen. They can't be what's called a Rasha, the Hamas. They can't have violated a certain category of the Isurim to Oraisa in the Torah, such that we are going to start being a little bit hesitant to trust what they have to say if they're testifying in a court of law. So one way of being disqualified to testify in a court of law is if someone is stolen. If they're a thief, we don't really trust them so much to start testifying in a court of law that we're going to take their word for everything that they say. So what some of the later commentaries, like in the Ketzos and the Bach, they say, well, if someone damages their friend's property, can they testify? Right? Did they violate a prohibition in the Torah which would render them invalid for testifying in a court of law? So the Ketzos says, I don't think so. Right, because the Ketzos is probably going to say, "What is when you damage someone else's property? What did you do? You hurt them monetarily. So what's the answer? Pay back the money. Once you pay back the money, do we trust you? Of course we trust you. You're not an untrustworthy individual. You're not an evil person who we have to be concerned about testifying falsely, right?" The Bach says, you know, if you think that there's a prohibition from the Torah to damage property, maybe it's included in the Isser of not stealing. Maybe it's included in the Isser of returning people's lost objects, whatever it might be. But if you think there's an Isser de Oraisa to damage that exists independently of having to pay back the money, so it says maybe you shouldn't be allowed to testify in a court of law until you did teshuva. Because maybe that would invalidate an individual from testifying in a court of law. Right? So those would be two different ramifications of this question of how do we view the issue of Nezek. Is it just about paying back money, or is there something a little bit more? Is there a prohibition? Is it Milik de Chasida? Does it go above and beyond a little bit? And just to end, because I have to stop in about 2 minutes, getting back to your question about, you know, your point that, you know, a lot of these things seem to be a little bit out of your control, or certainly some things that are not done with malicious intent. So what's the kind of mechanism that goes into this to this obligation to pay back? And certainly, if you want to take it a step further and say that there's like a real prohibition that's being violated here. So some of the Rishonim try to discuss like, yeah, like what is it about damaging? Like what is the real problem of causing damage? And there are really two perspectives, and this is good to keep in mind. We're not going to really develop it right now, but it's good to keep in mind. There are really two perspectives that you could answer if you were asked, why is it that when I damage, I have to pay, right? We know it makes sense, logically, that if I damage someone's property, I have to pay it back. And it might even make a little bit of sense that there's a degree of isser, of a biblical prohibition involved, because we try to have a higher standard, right? It might make a little sense, but, like, what's the mechanics behind it? Like, why is it that way? So there are really two perspectives, and you'll keep this in mind. Maybe you'll develop it over the course of the week. Some of the Mefarshim, like Rashi, says, you know why this is true? You know why you're obligated to pay back money when you damage? Well, the reason you're obligated to pay back money is because there's a certain assumed understanding that we all take responsibility for ourselves and for our belongings to make sure that we take proper precautions that we should not be responsible for causing damage. Our things, we ourselves personally, and our belongings should not be responsible for causing damage. We should make sure that if we have animals, we provide the proper context to make sure that they're not going to be able to go run around freely and cause damage, right? That's my responsibility as an owner of property to make sure that my property doesn't damage, right? That's one perspective. Another perspective is, no, it has nothing to do with responsibility, right? Another perspective is, we don't care if you have responsibility, don't have responsibility, if it's the right thing to do, wrong thing to do. In the end of the day, we ask one question. Objectively speaking, did I have a direct involvement in some loss of damage? And if the answer is that I had direct involvement, that my action in some level, right, and that could be a lack of taking care of my dog that it didn't run out to my neighbor's yard, or it could be that I myself went ahead and like took some item and smashed it on the floor. But if you can connect damage directly back to like my action, so then objectively, I am held responsible, right? It has nothing to do with my responsibility, right? Some of the commentators, just to crystallize this, point out that there could be a case where you can isolate these two factors, right? Is it that objectively I did something wrong, or is it that like I just kind of was too relaxed in my responsibility? So one of the cases that they bring up is, what happens if I have an animal and I'm supposed to guard it, but I don't? I let it go out into the Rishos HaRabim, into the public domain, and it starts causing damage. But before it starts causing damage, you know what I do? I make an announcement that I am relinquishing my ownership of this animal. I'm making it hefker. Anyone can take this animal. It belongs to anyone. It does not belong to me anymore. So from the standpoint of, is that a responsible thing to do? To like free my animals into public domain and then just say like, oh, I'm relinquishing ownership. They're not mine. Whatever happens is like totally not my responsibility, right? That's not a responsible thing to do. But technically speaking, objectively, did my animal cause damage? Can you link the damage that the animal caused back to me? No, because it's not my animal anymore, right? It's not mine. So if you think that the reason I have to pay is because I have a certain responsibility, so then in this case, I was totally negligent in my responsibility. But if you think that the reason I have to pay is because the objective consequence of my actions, you know, you can link the damage directly back to me, well, in this case, you can't do that because it's not my animal anymore, and therefore I would be exempt from the payments in that sort of case. So this could happen. This also has to do with, you know, this question of to what extent is this just about, you know, money, dollars and cents, and making me responsible, or to what extent is there an added level of responsibility that I want to take, this mili de chasida, in order to be, you know, kind of have this manifest example of, you know, Kedushas Yisrael and going above and beyond, letter of the law. So to what degree is that present in these monetary damages? That's kind of this open question that is dealt with in some of these sources. So we wish you tremendous hatzlacha in learning the amazing ins and outs and details of the monetary damages in the beginning of Bava Kamma. And we commend you on taking your free time before your summer gets started in real earnest to devote it to Talmud Torah. All right. I would take questions, but I got to run.
Thank you.
Shkoach.